So, radio voice on.
You know, this is my second podcast interview ever.
An easy hack is to just relocate yourself somewhere where there's more growth and less competition.
Southeast Asia is a great contender for that.
Business, lifestyle, and the philosophical implications of business whilst wearing shabby trousers. Or no trousers at all.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow hobos and hobo CEOs, of course, welcome to our current episode of the Hobo CEO podcast. Chris, are you there?
I am here, Nico. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. To the hobos, not to you. I know where you are.
Okay. I was just going to say, as it rarely happens, we're in the same time zone, so we are pretty sure about what time it is.
Indeed. Yes. So this week, we are both back on European soil, and we're going to do a little retrospective about our time in Southeast Asia. Going to talk about the pros and cons and the reasons to go out there and run your hobo, digital hobo, hobo CEO enterprise.
Exactly.
Yes. So before we do that, we're going to start with some reviews.
Yeah.
So following on our request to get some reviews, we've had some glowing reviews. So
yeah, really nice. Which we just discovered through this nice app. I only saw that one review that was for part of the German iTunes store, and now we were able to get a listing of all the reviews. And here's a nice one from one of your fellow British hobos, and or not a hobo. He says, "I'm not a hobo, but I like listening to these nutters." 5 stars. Nice.
Nice.
"I very much like the intro song. I work in the woods. I'm not a hobo, but I'm getting the whole thing."
Cool.
Very cool. So, and the intro song, I think a couple of reviews mentioned the intro song. You guys are hopefully aware that we put the intro up as a ringtone and whatnot on the hoboceo.com.
Yeah, so get it on the phone. Yeah. If you like the tune, get it
download.
On the phone.
Was my first action point to get it on my phone. Yeah.
Got to say a big thanks to TJ, our editor, producer, who composed and performed the intro tune. So yeah, props to him.
Absolutely.
Marvellous. Well, before we crack on the topic of Southeast Asia, let's poodle over to Inside the Hobo Suitcase.
Excellent. Well, and that's good. We're not actually recording, are we?
We are recording. So, welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Matthew Newton, fellow hobo and philosopher extraordinaire.
Thank you, sir.
Let's get down to business. So, what in a sentence is funding your hobo existence?
Up until yesterday, SEO consulting was partially funding my existence, but now I'm fully dependent on several websites that I have that gain income from advertising and affiliate revenue.
Marvellous. So it seems like we've found you at a big moment in your life.
Yeah, that's right. It's a moment where I have all sorts of time free because the websites kind of just run themselves, and I'm sort of just trying to figure out what my next steps are in terms of what I actually do with my time.
So you are a real, genuine hobo.
Yeah, I believe so.
Excellent.
If wandering around a city looking vaguely lost.
You've got a beard.
I have a beard. Yeah. But yeah, I believe I fit well into the definition of hobo. No permanent place of residence, right?
Splendid. Excellent. So, well, that leads into the next question.
Yeah.
Where are you located at the moment?
Well, I am in Berlin, but we'll see. I'm thinking of actually going to Spain, San Sebastian, for a few months. It's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you've been there.
I haven't been there.
But it's a beautiful city. It's got like a stillwater beach and a surf beach, which is probably every Australian's fantasy. Two fantastic beaches side by side, one stillwater and one surf water. So I think I'm going to be going down there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, let's get on to your luggage.
Okay.
That's what we've got you here for. So,
yeah, sure.
What is the average weight of your luggage?
You know, it's funny. It depends on whether you listen to the scales at the edge of the airport or the scales when you actually get to the check-in desk. Because I've noticed there always is a difference. I think it's around 11 kilos, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
11 kilos. I think that's over the...
That is.
Over the standard... Well, it's over the Air Asia allowance.
Yeah, it's over actually pretty much everyone's allowance. Right. When I weighed it initially, it was like 9.2 or something.
Yeah.
Went to the airport and they told me it was 12.8 or some crap. And I just kind of looked at them like, serious? And they kind of just waved me away. And I've just been on a wing and a prayer ever since. I've flown probably 30 times overweight in the last year, and not once has it ever been an issue for me.
Good tip there.
Yeah.
So for hobos who, like me, who want to take my kettlebells along,
yeah,
maybe it will work out.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it helps us to be, you know, really friendly when you get to the check-in desk, and then when it comes to them having to decide whether to hurt your feelings or not, they just find it easier not to.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
So, cabin luggage only?
Yes.
Tick. What's most likely to get you questioned by airport security?
2 months ago, that would have been nothing. But for some reason, I look like a Syrian, apparently.
Mm.
And that caused me a tiny amount of grief last time I flew into Egypt.
Mm.
Because for some reason, Egyptians seem to have me pegged as a Syrian.
Mm.
And so, and obviously with the amount of Syrians trying to find other countries at the moment to live in, they cause one or two issues.
But... So the moral of the story is don't wear your Syrian face.
Yeah, exactly. Shave that beard.
Okay, next question. Yeah. What is the most expensive and least expensive thing that's worth carrying in your luggage?
Okay, so I have a laptop. So that counts as the most expensive thing, obviously. And I have like a clothesline that I bought with like a voucher from my grandmother. She, it was like a leftover money on a voucher, so I bought it, and I can't throw it away just yet.
Right.
Even though not having used it once in 8 months because it's so light.
So it's got sentimental value.
Bit of guilt factor there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll go soon.
Interesting.
Though.
I wonder what else or other hobos are carrying for guilt reasons. Yes. Maybe a future question there. Okay, so final question. Anything else we might like to know about your luggage?
Something that surprised you guys the other day when I was talking to everyone at the cafe was how much I managed to squeeze in.
Mm.
I think people think with carry-on luggage that you have to travel in an extremely meager way. But, you know, I have 2 pairs of shoes and a pair of flip-flops. I've got 3 pairs of pants, 3 pairs of shorts, like 5 or 6, no, 7 t-shirts, like a button-up shirt, stuff like that.
Mm.
So I think if you just don't take all the other kind of extraneous crap and then have a couple of items you're willing to risk when you go through immigration, I mean through the airport counter check-ins, then, you know, you can get a lot more flexibility out of that 28-litre backpack than you probably would have ever imagined.
I remember your little story about elbowing your luggage back in and attracting the attention of everyone around.
Yeah, basically, when I went to Egypt, I bought a few pairs of pants just because of the cultural kind of reasons.
Mm.
And now when I put my clothes in, my bag is just like a little marshmallow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been through a few instances where I've put stuff in my bag and then started like just jumping on it and... elbowing it like I'm a wrestler or something like that, like smacking it against the wall and like leaning against it just to make it wearable, and like that always gets a few funny looks. But, you know, I've always just been a bit of a make do kind of traveler. I mean, there's all these people walking around with their extremely expensive backpacks with all the features, but I've got one that cost me like $25. I bought it maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah,
it's doing the job. Until it falls apart, or at least another. Like, unless some amazing deal comes along, you know, I'll just keep on wearing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's maybe one other thing is that I don't really subscribe to this optimize your piece of luggage thing. If it does the job, it does the job.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm kind of in the same camp, I think.
Yeah.
I've got that cheapo pink
yes
case, which just does the job.
Cheapos unite.
Yeah.
Brother.
Cool. High five. Marvellous. Well, thanks for joining us, Matthew. Hope to interview you more in the future.
Thank you. Love your beard.
So, Nico, sir, are you ready to talk about Southeast Asia?
I'm absolutely ready. And I have to say that now we both spend about, like, how much time did you spend? Like, about 4 months? And for me, it was more like 5 months in different parts of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So I think we got a pretty good sample. Travel is and wasn't our main objective, but we spent about, like, very roughly about, I spent about 2 months in Thailand, 1 month or 5 weeks together with you in Vietnam. Then I also spent some time in Malaysia.
Yeah, we both kind of did a sort of midterm stay in Southeast Asia, and we weren't really traveling around. We were mainly kind of working. So it's more from the perspective of the hobo CEO who wants to get some work done. What are the pros and cons for you, Mr. Hobo?
Of course, we're going to not only talk about the good things and also about the downsides. So there's definitely good news and bad news about hanging out in Southeast Asia. The cost of living, okay. Yeah, one of the, probably it's a biggie. I mean, the cost of living is really low. You can live very comfortably for, let's say, starting with a couple of $100 a month.
Well, all in for the entire budget? Or yes. Do you just mean accommodation?
No, I mean, like, for you could probably hang out comfortably at 500 US.
Yeah.
You can live pretty comfortably if you up that to 1,000 US a month.
Yeah, like 1,000 US is, that's the luxury budget. If you're kind of staying there sort of medium term, then you can get some real savings. You know, you can rent an apartment for a few months. And so that then your accommodation costs really drops.
Yeah.
But you know, we went proper luxury when we were in Ho Chi Minh City, and we shared a really fancy flat between three of us. It was $1,500, but that was $500 each, and it included a laundry service, and we had a huge roof terrace.
Daily cleaning. Daily laundry service, yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah, with our five cleaning ladies.
Yeah, the army of cleaning ladies. My feeling is like your money is worth four or five times as much.
Yeah,
that goes for renting stuff, goes for taxis, goes for food, all that stuff.
But it's no big secret. Everyone knows Southeast Asia is cheap.
So yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other benefits that we found. One of the things that I really got out of, especially being in Ho Chi Minh City in Chiang Mai, was meeting up with a fellow like-minded hobo CEOs, people who are working remotely. Because there's not that many foreigners. And out of those foreigners, there seems to be a much higher density of people like ourselves.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, this is one of the things I'm finding with contrast being back in Berlin. I know quite a few entrepreneurs in Berlin, but it's much harder to hang out with them because there's so many more people to hang out with in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Ho Chi Minh City, you know, there was such a small community of expats.
Yeah.
It's really easy to hang out with someone because they've got few options. You know, there's only a few people that they know there. Whereas in Berlin, you know, you could easily meet 100 people. You know, I found it much easier to meet up with people, and in particular, much easier to meet up with like-minded people.
Mm-hmm. Could be also like a little bit of a bubble, because you're not really aware. I mean, we haven't checked out the whole of Ho Chi Minh City, for example. We basically set up shop in a very narrow area in District 1, which was like in that one little side street we were living. Like, there were so many other people living that really close by. It's a little bubble, but it's really close. And there's probably only a couple of places where you regularly go to and where you run into a lot of like-minded people.
I'd say that bubble is precisely one of the reasons why I'd want to be in Southeast Asia or Ho Chi Minh City.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other benefits I was going to add is you're less distracted by, you know, local politics and local issues and just other people.
Yes.
Like in Southeast Asia, you're just different from most people. So people kind of leave you alone, aside from the obvious things like people trying to sell things to you or rip you off or whatever. You're generally just, you know, outside the loop and you're in a kind of bubble. And that's so good for focus because, you know, whenever I go back to London, say, you know, I can read all the advertisements on the train. I can hear the conversations around me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I'm so much more distracted
mm-hmm.
by the day-to-day life and what's happening locally.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm in Ho Chi Minh City, I've got just no idea of the politics.
Yes.
I don't know who the celebrities are. I don't know what's happening in the government. And, you know, these kind of things I'm really not interested in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm interested in building the business. And, you know, I don't read news or anything like that. And I find that it's that extra step further being in Southeast Asia. It's like there's really very little external influence. You know, like the funny thing is, when I was living in Japan, I would never read the news. And I had no idea what's going on in England. And so I got back to England and I didn't know who the prime minister was. I didn't know I don't know right now. I don't know which government is in power. I think there's like a coalition or something. But
so you're saying you're an ignorant bastard?
I'm a total ignorant bastard.
Yeah. No, I get that. The flip side of that bubble is it comes with a focus, the lack of being distracted by a lot of things. What's also connected to that might be the language issue. So in neither of the countries I was visiting, I got really into learning the language or having a lot of exposure to the language. In Malaysia, people are really good in English. In Thailand, it also seems most people kind of understand you if you're speaking English and you have like maybe like a 5 to 10 word vocabulary for ordering some food and saying thank you and so on. It was a little different in Vietnam, though. People were, at least that's my experience, maybe less understanding in terms English. Do you think that's
the case? I got that feeling as well. You maybe get by better with French than English.
That's possibly true. Yes,
a lot of the older people seem to speak French. There were a few younger people that we met, but you know, if you're kind of going shopping and just like, you know, day to day, there's a lot of people who will not understand English.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, the language is a bit of a double-edged sword, as I was saying. On the one hand, you're not distracted by, you know, people sat next to you on the train moaning about their boss or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, some places, you know, it can be a little bit tricky, certain situations. But I always say, you know, if you're going to a restaurant, you want to eat something and you've got to pay for it at the end. It's like, okay, if you've got some difficult dietary requirements, then that's a little bit of a challenge. But if you're just kind of happy to sample some local cuisine, what can go wrong, really? It's just like kind of point at the person next to you what they're eating.
Yes.
And like just put some notes into their hand at the end. And
eat some chicken feed or some dog, whatever.
Eat some dog.
If you don't mind, that's not a problem at all. No. But seriously, one of the best strategies is to see what other people are having and just point to, I want to have one of this, whatever it is. There was one time, at least one time, where we went to a restaurant and they didn't have an English menu. And we had that. We had somebody from another table who's speaking English translate some of the items from the menu so that we could actually understand whether we are ordering, I don't know, noodles with vegetables or chicken with rice or whatever, because it was totally undecodable for us. So let's talk a little bit about the incidents in terms of people overcharging or kind of getting the best of you. I think it was pretty funny when we arrived in Vietnam. And, you know, we got the whole thing going with our assistant there, which we talked about in the episode, Four Wheels to Get Going.
Yeah.
Get moving. So we had the assistant and she already made some preparations and she told us what kind of taxi we should get at the airport and how much it would it should cost to get to our apartment and so on. And then I remember you checking out this taxi, and the lady sells us this taxi ride, and she says, like, it's going to be 200,000 dong, and it's going to include everything. And we get on the taxi, you know, we get that receipt slip or whatever it was. We get on the taxi, the guy leaves the airport, and not 1 minute into the ride, there's some kind of toll booth, and the guy goes, like, we got to pay for the toll. And we were all like, no, the ride was including everything. And the guy just drops the case and smiles. Yeah, it was so funny.
so obviously trying to rip
yeah, but really nice try, you know. And it was like, yeah, about like he would have gotten, what did he ask for? Like maybe like $2. I think like $2
I think it was like less. It was like 40 cents or something.
Yeah, but he was kind of humorous about us not falling for the
and we were laughing at him, yeah, as well, you know. And I remember at the end he said tip, sort of smirking.
Yeah.
And we all just laughed.
Yeah, exactly.
And like he waved goodbye and left. So it was like a sort of a friendly attempt at extorting extra money.
Yeah.
But one of the things about this is, as I think I posted on a Twitter status update, is, you know, in Southeast Asia, you might every now and then, in my experience, this happened very rarely, but every now and then you might overpay for something, for a taxi ride, say. But it's like, you know, you might pay $8 when you should pay $4. But if you grab a cab in Tokyo, then it's just going to cost you $80.
Yeah.
They won't be ripping you off, but yeah, it costs $80.
Yeah, so
it's kind of not worth worrying about this stuff too much, in my opinion.
And even if you order food for a euro or $1.50 or something like this, if you don't like the soup, you could order something else. I mean, yeah, it's the risk is low.
We're kind of humanly programmed to not want to be ripped off, whereas actually the practical implications is it just doesn't matter, you know. It is not worth getting worked up about $2.
Yeah, and then obviously wherever we were, there was really nice weather, so it's warm. Most of the times, you don't even need hot water. It's actually nice to shower with quote unquote cold water, because it's not, yeah, even the water is not really it's not really cold. I remember coming back to Europe, two things that really stuck out. I was sitting on the toilet and I thought, damn, that seat is cold, which I didn't experience, yeah, over the last couple of months. And I was getting water from the faucet, and it was cold water, and it was really cold. Like I yeah, didn't get that kind of coldness over the last couple of months from any water, except from the stuff that I took from a fridge, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, weather is definitely nice, and beaches. So
before we get to beaches, weather, let's talk a bit more about weather, because weather is a bit of a double-edged sword, because it depends what you like. And, you know, typically it seems that most people in Europe and, I don't know, maybe North America are kind of drawn towards tropical beaches and heat. But it does get extremely hot.
Yes.
And it's really humid. And humid, if you've never been in a humid climate, it's pretty tough. Because what's happening when you've got high humidity is your body's sweating, but that sweat, normally it would evaporate, which would cool you down. But in a humid climate, it doesn't evaporate. So your body's natural cooling mechanism is severely impaired, and you subsequently, you feel a lot hotter.
Yeah.
Like if you're in a desert with a little bit of a breeze, it's much more pleasant than being in a somewhere like Bangkok with high humidity, even if the actual temperature's lower. The actual comfort level is, you know, it's much lower.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this translated to just having to deal with air conditioning. You know, I don't like using air conditioning, but
me too.
In most of my, the last, you know, 4-5 months pootling around Southeast Asia, I had to sleep with the air conditioning on. Otherwise, it was just too uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it is a double-edged sword. You know, on the one hand, beautiful sunny days. There's the other downside is it's seasonal. If generally the winter is great in Southeast Asia, it's like the cool or dry season.
Yeah.
But starting from, you know, about this time of year, running till October, it's the wet or hot season. I think it gets significantly more uncomfortable. And then you're dealing with intermittent downpours. And
yep.
So it's like, the weather, although it's kind of, it seems to be tropical paradise, if you've never been in a Southeast Asia before, you know, do be prepared for some discomfort as well.
Exactly. But as you were saying, everybody's looking for whatever they don't have. So if you're coming from like, I was really looking forward to the warmth and...
Yeah, I mean, if as a alternative to the freezing, miserable Berlin winter, I think I'd take Ho Chi Minh City any day.
Yeah, let's I mean, we're talking about meeting other entrepreneurs and such.
Let's get onto the kind of business side.
Yeah, let's focus for a little bit on the business side. So what's really going on in Southeast Asia? What did we experience? It starts with a lot of people that hang out there because of some of the advantages we already mentioned, and you can easily get in contact with them and there's a lot of basically like constant mastermind stuff going on. You can get a lot of advice. There's also a growing startup and tech scene in Thailand or in Vietnam. There's a lot of people you might actually be able to hire depending on what you're looking for. And just before I left, I was traveling through Bangkok and I was meeting Ian Borders, who's... the founder of MergePay. So he basically runs his own tech startup from Thailand. He's living in Thailand. And he's also, you know, mentoring and being a judge on different kind of startup competitions and so on. So he was staying in Bangkok for, I think, like even like 3 weeks, having different kinds of events. And there's like very active startup stuff going on.
I would like to clarify that and say that... it's more about the high density than there being a lot.
Okay.
Because I noticed being back in Berlin...
Good point.
There's shitloads of meetups, there's shitloads of startup things going on. And whilst there were some in, Chiang Mai and Ho Chi Minh City in Bangkok, I'd say it's not more in number. It's just like the ease in which you can meet the people who are also doing startup things is much higher.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And, that's true. Good point.
It's like, you know, I imagine if you went to San Francisco or something, then, you know, I gather something like 5% of the population are entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got like 5% of the population of San Francisco available. Whereas in Chiang Mai, you kind of got the feeling that it was at least 5% of the foreigners there were hobos,
mm-hmm.
and running some sort of startup or something. But there's just much less. There's only a few hundred people.
But it's very young and growing. So the exciting part is not about that it's super established and it's really
ubiquitous.
Yeah, thank you. But we just want to be clear that it's there and it's starting, and there's in a lot of aspects, I think there's higher demand. And especially if you come in as a Westerner, so to speak, it's a nice opportunity to join and do something there.
You know, in a sense, like places like Berlin, London, San Francisco are quite saturated.
Yes, that's what I'm...
You know, you turn up to San Francisco and you're in competition with a lot of other people. It's expensive. If you haven't made your mark, you might find it harder to get to know people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're somewhere where it's a kind of new, fresh scene, it's just much easier to be accepted and to be kind of part of the scene.
Now, to put that even in a bigger context, Southeast Asia and Asia in general, that would also like the proximity to Singapore and China and so on, it's really a growing economy. There's a lot of, I mean, like Thailand has like really interesting numbers in terms of like how they develop, and hanging out there, getting to know the country and the culture and so on a little bit could also be a really nice addition to your, not skill set, but you know what I'm like, your kind of what the experiences you have, people you know, that stuff.
As you said, it's like a real developing part of the world. You know, you sit in London, read the newspapers, it's all doom and gloom about the economy falling apart.
Yeah.
Whereas you're in Asia, it's the complete opposite. You know, every year the GDP is increasing significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you can see construction, and there's a lot of room for growth in Southeast Asia. Whereas it seems, whether it's mostly just kind of the press creating headlines that people will read, but you know, there's this general sense that things are possibly declining rather than growing.
Yeah,
I don't know. The reality might be quite different. It might be, you know, I'm not. What I want to say is, you know, Asia is definitely growing, so it's quite an easy hack is to just relocate yourself somewhere where there's more growth and less competition. And it seems to me like Southeast Asia is a great contender for that.
So let's finish the business side. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities. Some of the downsides, some of the more funny downsides, I think. Here's the biggest one. There's no Amazon deliveries in Thailand, Vietnam, or Malaysia, I think. Maybe they do deliver stuff, but everybody is really cautious about getting things delivered because they might end up not where you want them to be, and, you know, customs and so on. So in order to get your hands on some things that you would get really easily while being in Europe or the States, it's difficult. It took me a couple of weeks to get my hands on the microphone that I'm using here for the podcast. As you know, we had to record a couple of episodes where I just could use a simple headset.
I love your story about Christian Dietrich.
Yeah.
Having his shoes stolen.
Yes.
He just kind of left them too near the entrance of the place he was staying, and they were gone. He couldn't, like, replace them. He couldn't get some nice Vibram five-finger shoes again. You know, he had to just buy some crappy trainers, and that was the best he could do.
And then sometimes you have to find somebody who's bringing you stuff, maybe, or you have to, you know, that stuff is a little more complicated.
You could probably sum this up as, it's going to be much harder to get certain things.
But that's not true for everything. So, for example, you can easily buy a new Apple computer. No problem. I actually got my iPad replaced within a week. It was malfunctioning with the display. And I brought it to an authorized Mac repair thing, and they just send it, I think, to Singapore and got me a new one within 5 business days or whatever. So that's not going to be a problem. But like shoes or some stuff like that might actually be.
I think one thing is, it's just, you could reframe this as a challenge rather than a disadvantage.
You could.
But in general, you know, there's just a sort of certain level of discomfort which you will be coming across on a regular basis.
Or let's just say it's a different category of discomfort, because there's other discomforts that I'm experiencing being back in Germany, for example, that, I mean, you're just not that aware of because you're lacking the contrast of not having them. Yeah. So that's, you know, one of the interesting advantages of going to a different place, and not only for 1 week or 2 weeks where it's like the super exception, but for a certain period of time, like coming back, you also experience how what you're used to is now different. So some of the minor discomforts in Southeast Asia, let me give you a little list and then see what's most interesting to talk about. Yeah. There's sometimes crazy traffic, and crazy means like dangerous. There's a different level of air pollution that you got to be aware of. There's cockroaches, which I don't have in, we don't have in Germany. Some hygiene issues, some different kinds of toilets or whatever you got to get used to, and the occasional food poisoning, which I experienced about like 2 or 3 times during my 5 months. It's not like, it wasn't that bad, but it struck me down for 2 or 3 days, maybe.
Yeah, you were unlucky.
I was.
I've not had anything in all my Asian travels.
Stomach bugs. Yeah. And then, of course, I mean, the traffic, that's just, I remember there was on our first taxi ride, it was like there were so many scooters, like motorbikes on the street, and there's like some of them only carrying one person, most of them carrying 2, 3, or 4 people, and then different appliances and what gets transported on scooters in Vietnam. We were always joking about you could make a really nice Tumblr blog about that.
Yeah, we saw some guy with a tree once.
Yeah.
It was like a kind of
absolutely
15-foot tree or something ridiculous.
TV sets, a lawnmower.
Dogs.
Of course, all kinds of dogs.
Regularly seeing people with a dog on a scooter.
dogs have great scooter driving talents in Southeast Asia.
So I think out of that list, I think the danger on the roads is probably the biggest downside, because that is a real danger.
Yeah.
Like cockroaches and food poisoning. And I've met lots of people who've been in accidents. In the few months that I was in Southeast Asia, several friends of friends or friends had been in accidents. And there was, like, I heard of one fatality.
Yes.
A couple of people who were, like, really seriously injured in the hospital. There was some guy who was trying to raise money for some local person who'd been in an accident. It makes sense because the roads are chaotic. On the flip side, you're in Europe and people moan about the kind of traffic regulations and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they make your life, it's much lower chance of you losing your life as a result of these regulations.
Well, in Thailand, for example, you got to drive. Like, people don't drive by following rules. People drive by looking at everybody else. So traffic is much more alive, and you got to be really aware of who's doing what, and everybody's more driving very defensively. It's not like it's my turn, so I'm just going to pull out or whatever. So interestingly enough, especially the locals in Thailand, there's so many people on motorbikes, no helmets, no lights at night, especially the Thais, most of them drive without helmets, especially like within the city perimeters. And as you're saying, there's a lot of accidents. So
the takeaway for me is I would avoid using a scooter myself. I did use one a few times, but I tend to rely on either walking or taking taxis. It depends where you are, but being in Chiang Mai, being in Ho Chi Minh City, being in Bangkok, it's very dense and there is public transport.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I was in Phuket, there was much less public transport and everything was spaced out. So you really did need a scooter to get around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is one of the key things, is to minimize your risk to the roads. But let's, any of these things that we've mentioned, how any of them affect business? Internet connectivity.
Yes. Oh, let's
had plenty of internet connectivity troubles. Although generally the internet was fast, there was quite a lot of outages. And I remember running a ping test in Ho Chi Minh City, and mm-hmm. the speeds were quite high, but there was, single percentage drop rates, and sometimes kind of creeping up higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone doesn't know what a ping is, it's just a little kind of test to see if you can connect to the internet, and it tells you if any of the connections are dropped. So it's just like pinging every few seconds or milliseconds. And if you do a ping test in basically any European city or Japanese city that I've done a ping test, it's usually been 0% dropped. Maybe if you run it for a whole day, you might get a few drop packets, but it's like that's a significant change. And that affects things like Skype calls and certain things it won't affect too much. But, we had a lot of trouble recording this podcast. I had trouble kind of speaking to people on Skype.
Yeah, sometimes it does. So there's a certain, let's say, failure rate that comes with that. I think what we should also mention is different possibilities of staying in certain countries. So Thailand has, compared to Vietnam, for example, a much more strict visa policy. So you can only stay for so and so long. And Vietnam is much easier, for example, to stay there for extended periods of time. And depending on where you want to go and how much, like some of the travels basically we did were caused by or related to our visa situation.
Yeah.
So some people get really used to doing a lot of visa runs, and if that's too much hassle for you or distracts you from working and business things, then you might choose your location accordingly.
Well, you can turn this into one of the advantages on our list. Is it's one of the things about Southeast Asia, it's relatively cheap and easy to get around and to get to some other tropical destination.
Yes.
So you could do this. You could go to Thailand for a month. You get a month visa on entry, no problems. At the end of that month, you plan a trip to some island in Malaysia or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Ho Chi Minh City or something, or you spend a month there. You can actually get a 3-month visa, or you can get longer visas relatively easy. It just costs more.
Yes.
But say you just do a month in Vietnam, and then you go back to Thailand again for another month, and then maybe you go to Malaysia to finish. I think you get 3 months or 90 days a visa on entry in Malaysia.
Yeah, it's so basically what you just did, and what I think what everybody can do is a lot of these pros and cons, they kind of outweigh each other. So, okay, there's a visa situation, for example, might be a problem in being in South Asia, but then flights are so cheap that you could turn that into, as you were saying, into a pro and say, well, that's nice because after a month I'm going to just spend 1 week on an island or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think in most places it's still, you can go there 30 days, leave and come back the next day and just get another visa.
Yeah.
I only met one person who had been doing that for several years and he was starting to get trouble. But I think, you know, if you're new to Southeast Asia, you shouldn't have any troubles kind of going somewhere, just going away for a weekend and coming back again.
Yeah. And even the no Amazon deliveries disadvantage turns out to be an advantage, at least for me, because in all the time I spent in Southeast Asia, the only two really items that I purchased and wanted to buy were that microphone and a pair of sneakers.
Yes.
Okay, so some stuff is harder to get by, you maybe just don't spend money on that. That's nice.
So another business benefit, which we haven't covered yet, is the possibility of hiring people locally. We met quite a few talented local individuals, and some of our fellow Hobo CEOs also hiring quite a lot of people locally. Typically, the salary for a high-level PHP developer or a designer is going to be a fraction of that in San Francisco or New York. And although it is a double-edged sword, because you know, it's hard hiring people at the best of times, let alone hiring people from a different culture, different language, different background. But you know, if you're willing to put the effort in on hiring people and really screening out the right people and, you know, interviewing people, and you know, you can really save a lot of money.
Yeah, I think one of the smartest things we came across regarding that was what Stephen Moody did. He hired this really high quality English fluent project manager, female project manager, in Vietnam. She wasn't really cheap, but she was then being really valuable to him because she would manage and hire the rest of his workforce.
Yeah, that's a really good hack. It's we're going to cover this in another podcast episode, because
yeah.
I interviewed James Ferrer, who has a similar strategy when using Odesk.
It's like basically hiring a kind of middle management locally. It only talk to them basically, and they take care of hiring additional workforce.
Yeah. Okay. Some other random things on our list which we haven't covered, not especially business related, but cheap healthcare. You know, Thailand has got a reputation for high quality and extremely low cost healthcare. I had some dental work done in Ho Chi Minh City. Dental work. I had my teeth cleaned and checked, and it was like $12 or something.
Yeah, I did the same in Thailand. Even my German dentist recommended, when I mentioned it, he recommended getting that stuff done in Thailand.
Yeah.
Because he said they're high quality. It's really inexpensive, and there were other people that did like really fancy blood screenings, health checkups, and the cost is comparatively really, really low.
Yeah.
And you get really high quality work. Some of the people were big fans of traditional Chinese medicine,
yeah,
practiced, for example, in Thailand. So you could, I mean, shit, we forgot about the massages, man.
How could we not?
Oh my God.
That is actually a business benefit.
Yeah.
If you have a massage every day, your business will do better.
Let's see, at least every other day. Yeah, it's really affordable. It's much more affordable there than it is here in Europe. And yeah, I mean, massages and then like acupuncture and that kind of stuff. If you're a fan of that, that's it's going to be a dream living in Thailand or possibly Vietnam.
And another couple of things on our list. Of course, the tropical beaches. I don't think we need to talk about them because that's what Southeast Asia is famous for. But the other one I've got on the list is it's easy to have unusual or cultural experiences. So although we're not really talking about being on holiday here, we're talking about, you know, being a hobo CEO, getting work done on saving money and whatnot. Still, it's nice to have easy access to new and interesting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you really need to do when you're somewhere like Southeast Asia is just kind of go to a part of the city you haven't been to before. And, you know, there's going to be something there which is going to be completely outside your gamut of experience.
I did so many things for the first time in my life over the last couple of months. There was a really high density. So
first time you ate dog.
For example. No, like, just kidding. But yeah, that's a lot of things like that. And that's brings a lot of color and variety to what you experience. I think that's a really nice benefit.
You know, you could construe that as a business benefit as well, because, you know, for me, since I've been back in Berlin, I've been really focused on work and I've kind of not been going out much and not really doing much. And I noticed that it's fine for about a week, but after a while, I realized that I need to have some variance in my experience just to sort of shake up my brain cells a bit. So as Jesse Lawler mentioned on his Smart Drug Smarts podcast, getting uncomfortable, getting outside your uncomfort zone is good for your brain.
Absolutely.
So I think in that context, Southeast Asia is great because you just step out your door, take a taxi somewhere, or just, you know, somebody will say, oh, I'm going to this night market, do you want to come? Straight away, there's an opportunity to shake up your brain cells.
Yes.
So another couple of key business gotchas is one of them is the cost of traveling to your focus and concentration. We talked about this in depth in our previous episode, Four Wheels to Get Moving.
Yes.
But, you know, if every time you're relocating and you're relocating, say, once a month, it might take you a few days to get your bearings, and that's lost productivity.
Yeah.
So listen to our episode on this Four Wheels to Get Moving, because there's definitely ways of minimizing this. And
it's going to be harder in the beginning, like if you do it the first couple of times, but you can get really good at it. Like the getting through your basically checklist of things that you need to get to full speed again. So it's also, you increase your flexibility and you get better at that. That's not a big issue. One other thing is the implications of time zones. So that's depends on what kind of business you're running, but Southeast Asia, if you're running business, if you're doing business with people, for example, in Europe, is really comfortable, because while you're being in Southeast Asia, you are kind of 5 or 6 hours, depending on summer or winter, ahead of everybody in Europe, and that means it's fairly simple, fairly easy to have conference calls and even talk to your whatever accountants or something like that in their mornings, because it's going to be your afternoons, and that's fine. There's a flip side to that. If you're traveling places like South America, I actually met a couple that have a business from in the UK. They'd have to do customer support, so they have to be available at, you know, like regular business hours. And they say if they couldn't travel to South America at the moment, because they would have to be up all night. Like they'd have to get up really like at 1 or 2 in the morning just to take customer calls from people from the UK.
Yeah, so there's a little warning there. Plan your time zones carefully.
Yeah.
There's some nice tools for doing that. There's, what's it called? I always just Google World Time Zone Planner. I can't remember what the actual site's called, but you can stick in your time zone and your client's time zone and look, and it kind of it has like color-coded green for places where there's good overlap.
Nice.
And every new destination you're thinking about, ping it in there, and if you've got a green light, then you're going to be okay.
So that's basically the big overview, kind of pros and cons, what we think about being in Southeast Asia as one possible, not travel, but doing business, living there, possibility for hobo CEOs. I think everybody can, you can, just shoot us an email or get a hold of us on Twitter at Hobo CEO and ask us. Maybe we can help you out.
We've got to stick that SpeakPipe plugin on the site so people can ask us questions, record questions for us.
Yeah.
And we can answer them on the show.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Yeah.
And we're going to put some of the stuff we mentioned in the show notes. And as I said, all additional questions, please forward to the Hobo CEOs through all possible channels.
Indeed, yes. So, thanks for listening, you hobos. Find us Twitter, Hobo CEO, and visit the website, hoboceo.com. Till the next time.
See you guys.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Morons, pipe dreams, protons, hunting, leaping, jumping, kite surfing, landing pages, optimization, and superheroes. Another amazing podcast magic production.